Hello, this is Kay Ballard, and you are listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio, where we most assuredly are not. Well, that was awful, because this is the part of the show where I'm supposed to make you feel welcome and happy to be here and ready to listen to what comes next. I'm supposed to spend the entire next hour convincing you we aren't funny. I'm not supposed to do so and end all speculation in the first minute. So forgive me and let me take it back. Welcome to Women Are Not Funny, the place where women occasionally are. So you heard the opening music. It's an arrangement of Rossini's William Tell Overture called William Tell Tricycle. And we bought the music and hired a professional voiceover artist to do the intro, but it still isn't ready. So that's truly the only suspense on Women Are Not Funny, is when are we going to have our intro for the second season ready? Because this is our third show of the second season, and I think it's probably a good idea for me to talk a bit about what happened last week. Some of you were here, some of you weren't. Melissa Pierce was our guest, and she's one of our regular featured guests. She's smart and funny and talented and pretty. And I used to like her, but not anymore, because last week on this very same time on Women Are Not Funny, Melissa Pierce, my guest, walked off the show with 10 minutes left to go. And she had an excuse for doing it. Her excuse was that she had a screaming child. Okay? I could hear, while we were talking, I could hear the child screaming in the background. And I like to believe that I'm a woman with some amount of empathy, so very casually, as we were talking, I very calmly dialed Child Protective Services on the phone there in Chicago and told them about the situation so that they could go out and investigate. But I never in a million years thought that Melissa would actually walk off the show. I mean, the whole thing was very useful to me because it reminded me why I have so little use for children. And it was just a terrible thing. You know, imagine how I felt. I did not know what to do. But I immediately started thinking about reputation management. My own reputation, of course, and how I could make myself look good by making Melissa look really, really bad. I'm not known for fast action, and I'm certainly not known for fast thinking. So there I was, live on the air, so to speak. So I just kept talking. And that's something I can do. I tried to stay calm, but at the same time, I was thinking, if I could blow this whole thing out of proportion and make it into a really big deal, I would have a good chapter for my memoirs. And also, I could bolster my case for a refill of my Xanax prescription. So anyway, strangely, and I do mean strangely, I made it through to the end of the hour. It was just very, very, very strange. Some of you may wonder if I ever listen to the replays of Women Are Not Funny, if I have the courage, if I have the guts. The truth is, I love the sound of my own voice, so of course I do. And I listened to the replay of last week's show, and I discovered that I have an interview style very similar to someone who I do not admire, and that is Ann Curry. And the reason I don't like her interview style is because this is what she does. She previews the questions. She talks endlessly about what she's about to ask. Then she asks the question in a manner that doesn't require the person she's interviewing to even have an answer. So essentially, she previews the question, asks the question, and then answers the question. And as I listened to the replay of last week's show, I realized that that was very much my own style, and perhaps that's the reason I'm so offended by Ann Curry's style. Now, Ann Curry, of course, is famous and beautiful and is, you know, a big star at NBC, and I, you know, I'm the same way, famous, beautiful, and a big star here on Women Are Not Funny, so we do have that in common already, but, you know, I hate it, hate that we have that in common. I would much prefer to have our salaries in common, for example. You know, that would be all right with me. But at any rate, we'll see how I do today. It's going to be a real challenge and a real opportunity because the person who is our guest today is truly a communications professional. And she has been doing podcasting, teleseminars, essentially internet radio for a very long time, and she's really good at it. In fact, that's how I met her. That's why I became intrigued with her in the first place, is because I was so impressed with her level of talent. Now, I invited her here today for the kickoff show of Divorce Month. Yes, this is Divorce Month on Women Are Not Funny Radio, and really we're talking about February. So, like most things about divorce, it's just wrong. We have the kickoff of Divorce Month on the wrong month. But we did that for a reason, and it's because we were able to snag this woman as our guest. She's a good friend, at least she was until today. And so I'm so delighted to introduce Heidi Neybert.
Thanks, Kay. I think I'll still talk to you, at least for the next hour. I'm not totally offended.
Well, as we discussed, it's going to be impossible for us to have a conversation that's only an hour long. So
I know. I'm already going through withdrawal. I mean, this is just such a short period of time. And you know that you and I can just go on and on and on. I think we've had a couple of marathon calls that went into the 4 and 5 hour time slots, which I think bankrupted you at some point, did it? Did it not?
It actually
phone service in the U.S.
Actually, it was a double digit telephone conversation that did that. But Heidi, you know, my question for you, and I'm not going to ask this Ann Curry style. I'm just going to lay it out there. Do you think it's a good idea for us to have Divorce Month on Women Are Not Funny?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, divorce is a huge industry, and I think all women should participate in it at least once.
Well, many do. You know,
absolutely.
Many do. Mm-hmm. And I did mention that you have your own show. You've had several, but one that you have that is long-running and every Sunday night mm-hmm. is Divorce Dads Weekly.
That's right.
How long have you been doing that?
Divorce Dad Weekly has been around for over 4 years. I can't believe it, actually. Yeah, we started it in 2006. That was an offshoot from a one-hour podcast show that we started called Dadcast. And, in fact, you can still find Dadcast on iTunes. We did 12 one-hour shows, and it was done like a variety show. It was tremendously involved in terms of post-production, and there was a lot of front-end work in getting all the material together and so on. Now my partner Danny and I do these weekly shows, and it's actually easier to do. It's anywhere between, we try to keep them under 70 minutes, and we've got them in two segments. We have a training segment under 70 minutes, and then we have a Q&A segment. So there's actually two segments that you can listen to individually. Or at the same time, I mean, hey, we've got two ears. If you can concentrate your right ear on the training and the left ear on the Q&A, you can get both done at the same time.
Well, I confess to you that I have been a listener, even though I really do not qualify as a divorced dad. I mean, I qualify. I am divorced, but I am not a dad. But I, even though I'm not a divorced dad, I find your show very, very entertaining.
Oh, great. I mean, you know, we try to bring a little bit of humor into what we talk about. I always play devil's advocate. My partner Danny is a legal professional. He's not a lawyer, so thank God for that. Unlike my present company here, tongue in cheek here. But he's been working with fathers. He's a divorce coach. And one thing that we both share is that we're both adult children of divorce, although I don't know about the adult part. I'm not quite sure that we can really qualify as adults, but we went through divorce as children when our parents were divorcing. So we've got all the horror stories, and you know, we can certainly speak to these issues from a child's perspective and, you know, pretty much clean up any psychologist or other type of psycho professional in terms of what they think children are going through, because you know what, I got the t-shirt and I can prove it because I survived my parents' divorce, and so did Danny. The thing is, I grew up and went into art and became an art director and studied graphic design, so I have no legal training whatsoever, but I have one of those types of inquiring minds, like I want to know the answer. And because I find legal terminology really offensive, like it's never clear, I'm constantly badgering him to explain it in English or a non-legal language so that everybody else who's listening in can understand it like I could. You know, the bottom line is, you know, this stuff can sometimes be so overwhelming because you don't understand what your lawyer's telling you. You know, it's like, okay, wait a minute, what was that term you just said? And then they're off to a whole other, you know, dissertation or paragraph, and you've totally lost them. And then, of course, at the end of the conversation, it's sign here and give me your credit card. I mean, it's so overwhelming. So I always play devil's advocate with him and say, well, what do you mean you need to file and serve? File what? And where are you filing it? And what does serving mean? Am I bringing it out on a platter? So I'm always pushing the envelope with him. And believe me, you want to see theatrics, you'd have to be here while we're doing it because we're constantly making dirty faces at each other. But I don't know that that comes across on the audio.
Well, let me tell you why I find it entertaining, okay?
Okay.
I mean, it's not because of some, you know, random humor in it, but because you both are very, very involved, there's an energy to it that is tangible and, you know, and the subject matter is, let's face it, interesting. But I have to raise a little bit of objection, if you will, to the way you characterize legal speak. Not because what you said isn't true, but I just want to remind you that for most of us, the reason we went to law school is so that we could talk that way. We
Absolutely.
Like to confuse people. We like to do exactly what you said. And then we do like to say, you know, at the end of the day, pay here. And so we like all of those things. And the very things you're objecting to are the very reasons that most of us went to law school.
Mm.
When I got to law school and was told in a legal writing course that, you know, the goal was to make our writing easier to understand and less legalese, I was so disappointed. You know, I thought, oh, so I got here and the game has changed.
Mm.
But, it, you know, fortunately, it really hasn't changed, and you can still really confuse people and use words that no one, including yourself, understands that still, you know, heretofores and so forth. And query. I love query, and I really object when anyone that's not an actual lawyer uses it. So I just wanted to make a stand. Yes, you can put down lawyers, Heidi. In fact, when we were talking earlier in the week, you even used an expression that, you know, I'm still having problems with. You said something about eating lawyers for breakfast?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we teach the dads that listen in on our webcast is you need to educate yourself. And, you know, this isn't just exclusive to dads. Moms need to do this, too. I mean, divorce is incredibly expensive, not only financially but also emotionally. But, you know, let's face it, if you could keep some of that hard-earned equity that's in your home, post-divorce and actually afford to, you know, put your kids through college at some point rather than your lawyer's kids. I mean, that's always refreshing. But the bottom line is, you know, understanding what these people are talking about is really key. And navigating through an environment that you have no training in can be a daunting task. I mean, it's almost like this whole system of the legal system in itself is kind of it's kind of run from both ends. We all know that most people, most men and women that end up in some sort of legislative assembly. Now, I live in Canada, so we have something called Parliament. And we do have a Senate here, although it's nothing like the Senate that you guys have in the U.S. Senators here are appointed. They're not elected. And once they're appointed, it's like it's a retirement home, and they're there until they pretty much keel over. And, you know,
ours is pretty much the same way. How is it just elected? You know,
but you guys get to elect these guys. The thing is, most of the people that end up in your House of Representatives or in our Parliament or in our Senate, and then, of course, in the local state or provincial legislature, same deal. Most of those people went to law school. Now, they may not be practicing lawyers, but they understand all the legalese, and eventually they're all going to, you know, somebody's going to write a law on all the different areas that they're going to attack, right? And, of course, it's always written in a language that nobody but lawyers can understand. And then, of course, you know, they also have something to do with the people that enforce the law. So you've got judges and clerks in the courts, and the procedures that are written in a language that, again, only lawyers can understand. And, you know, it just seems like such a closed shop, and the rest of the world is kind of left out and have no other choice but to hire one of the good old boys, and these days good old girls, in the system. And it's kind of like it's a self-perpetuating, financially funded environment, you know, and
it is, and I have heard your case, and I have heard nothing that justifies turning me and my brothers at the bar into breakfast cereal, Heidi. I just will not have it. I will not
have it.
So if you guys,
it's
you
time for the people
power,
to take their power back and actually start to take control over their lives. I'll tell you, the big issue I have, though, seriously, is divorce affects families. And families don't even, in my opinion, families don't belong in court. Yeah, go to court if you're suing your neighbor because he, you know, his dog bit your leg, or because you had an auto accident, or because the medication that so-and-so company produced caused your leg to fall off. You know, whatever. I mean, those are all legitimate claims. But families do not belong in court. So, I mean, that's a whole other conversation that we won't even go into. The problem is when we put families in the court environment or in the legal environment, we drain their pockets, and, you know, they're already emotionally distraught to begin with, and now add the fact that they are penniless and can't feed their children and can't clothe their children or send them to college, you know, it's not a good situation.
Well, I agree with that. Now, did you notice a few minutes ago we did that thing that we talked about, and I told you it's just a constant problem for me, both on Women Are Not Funny and mm-hmm. another project that I'm involved in, and that's talkovers. And so what we talked about, and I think it's, you know, extremely interesting and related to divorce in a tiny way. You mentioned that your partner, and he is your husband, Danny Gusby, is you're in the same room when you're doing your weekly teleseminars. And so that helps some with the talkovers, but I'm just imagining what it might be like to be in that room with him as you're doing this, and how is it that you stay married?
Well, here's the truth. We aren't married. That's rule number one.
That works.
Happy to reveal something else that I'm only revealing on your show because I feel
okay.
It's so appropriate considering that you're talking about divorce months, that I'm the first guest on this topic and that this month that's kicking in tomorrow. You know, truth is, even though I'm not a legal professional, although I talk about legal stuff all the time, I didn't actually get divorced until last year. Now, we're talking in 2010, and in August of 2009, I finally got divorced. So, in fact, my partner could not have married me, unless, of course, we were in Utah, right? Where I think
right.
You can marry more than one female at a time. I don't know. Can you do it the reverse? Can I marry more than one man? Is that possible? Can I have more than one husband in Utah? I want you
to
get back
you.
To me on that. I think that we need to start.
I don't think I can give you. In the first place, I'm not going to give you legal advice. I cannot give you legal advice.
Oh, we're starting with
Utah
the disclaimer
law.
Already here. Okay.
The disclaimer is crucial. The disclaimer is my friend. The
okay.
disclaimer follows me everywhere, and it precedes me. And, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. But really, Heidi, you know, why would you want to know the law of multiple spouses? I mean, one at a time is enough, right, for most people, right?
Here's the problem. In order to actually get a divorce done, you actually have to do some paperwork. Now, here's the truth. My first husband and I split up in 1992, and at the time, the housing market in Toronto was kind of in the dumper, kind of like what it is right now in the U.S., and so I actually talked my husband into not selling the house at that time, and we settled our property 7 years later when the housing market came back up, and so that was kind of cool. And then, so we did all that, and I told him, I said, you know, you took care of the house for those last 7 years, and that was great. We got a lot of money for the house when we sold it. And, I said, you know, just as a gesture, I'm gonna actually do the divorce, and I'll pay for it. You don't have to pay for that. Now, that was in 1999, in around September. And, I got around to it last year. Curiously enough, 5 days short of my 25th wedding anniversary.
Well, there are all kinds of ways to celebrate.
Absolutely.
A delightful one. Well, you know, very interesting. Part when I was hearing your story and hearing how you were being so revealing and, you know, how I got it out of you, I'm actually an investigative reporter, aren't I?
Mm. Yes, you are.
I have opened up a whole new career option for me. Mm. I am an investigative reporter. I can get my guests to spill their guts.
That's all I'm spilling, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, it made me kind of want to spill the guts about my own divorce, but then I thought, no, I don't think so. I'll talk. Oh, in divorce month, for home month, divorce month, you know, sooner or later, I'll talk a little bit about my divorce, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not
we just
today,
want
because,
the messy stuff. Tell us some of the messy stuff.
I know the stuff you want, you know. Mm-hmm. And believe me, if it wasn't messy, I'd make it up. I would absolutely make it up. But anyway, back to this weekly show. I just was thinking about it because, well, I don't want to marry again. Let me be clear about that. You're not married. I do not want to marry again. And I'm not a divorce expert. But I was thinking maybe I should marry again in the hopes of becoming one.
You know? Right. Absolutely.
But I wondered if your show, since that's where all of the divorced dads hang out weekly, if that would be a good place to meet men.
You know, I was thinking that is, in fact, another direction we can go because we're thinking we'll do divorce mom weekly. And then we could, you know, kind of do the divorcee weekly and get both moms and dads together so they can, you know, basically be miserable together.
I think that is a brilliant idea. And, you know, I'm not surprised that a brilliant idea comes from you because you have about 10 a minute. And so that sounds like one more. But I'm a little more interested. We can talk about that. We can talk about your brilliant idea. We can talk about anything you want to, but we also have to talk about what I want to talk about. And what I want to talk about is if that is a good place for me to meet a man.
Well, you know, here's the downside. And you know, full disclosure here. You have to understand that the men that come to us have already been beaten down, likely by at least one or two lawyers. So a good portion of whatever assets they had prior to the beginning of the separation are gone. So if you're looking for someone to take care of you, move on, woman, because these guys are actually looking for a sugar mama because they have very, you know, limited funds. Some of these guys end up living in their cars or living at their parents'. If you're comfortable with that, that's good. So, you know, it comes
down to... Honey, that's horrible.
Then
you add to that they're dads, so that means they have bratty children, even if the children are adults. You know,
and they have financial obligations.
They have bratty.
They have financial obligations to those
Financial obligations to bratty children? It sounds terrible. But
yeah.
Let me tell you something. Even though it's probably not a good source of, you know, men for my future, I don't think, you know, I'm a good person, Heidi, you know, and I like to help people. So what I wondered is, are these guys ever depressed?
Oh, well, of course they are, sure. All the time. I mean, this is a depressing situation.
It sounded terribly depressing, you know, to be wiped out financially and still have financial obligations to bratty children.
Right.
And to have, you know, and to have lawyers who you wanted to eat for breakfast, but, you know, maybe they had you for breakfast. I mean, that sounds horrible. So I was thinking perhaps just kind of as one of my gifts to the world, you would like to have me come by and lead them in a chorus of Free Bird by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
I kind of know that song. I haven't heard it in a long time.
Well,
I
heard it recently because Will Ferrell closed out the Conan O'Brien show with Free Bird, and you know, he did a great. He actually did, in my opinion, a better rendition than Lynyrd Skynyrd. But he closed. It had a lot of cowbell, a whole lot of cowbell, and so it kind of inspired me. I didn't see the Conan show, but I saw it on YouTube, and I was singing it all day. And I just thought that would be a great thing for me to do. I could go and help those divorced dads, help them out, you know, by leading them in Free Bird. And I'd be happy to do it, Heidi. I don't sing that well, but, you know, I never let that stop me, ever.
Well, you know, I'll consult with Danny, and we'll get back to you on that. You know, maybe you want to just pre-record it, and we could just use it as our opening material. I mean, there's a thought.
Yeah, I think it would really help them. But, I kind of thought it was possible that I was going to get one of those we'll get back to you answers, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Is that what I just
said? Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what you just said, and somehow it didn't really come as a surprise.
Well,
but,
you see, what you didn't realize is that you too, even though you're a lawyer, and I'm never going to hold that against you, although I probably
should. You do. You bring it up every 10 seconds. My goodness.
Even though you're a lawyer, you do have some psychic abilities. That's clear.
Really?
Well, you predicted what I would say. You did?
I did predict that, so I am a psychic.
You are?
Lawyer/psychic.
Yeah.
Oh.
The two really shouldn't be combined, but I think you may have a whole other talent. I mean, if you were able to predict how cases could end up, you know, resolving, you might have a whole other business there.
Yeah. Well, you know, lawyers do that all the time.
Right.
You know, just predict how cases are going to be resolved. But you're right. If I, since I have psychic ability in addition to, arguably, in addition to legal ability, well, then I could probably do both. But, mm-hmm. you know, the thing is that, there are many, many, many reasons I wanted you to be our featured guest today. Mm-hmm. Including, I just like you. You know, you're just someone I like. But I had actually wanted to come to you for advice. You know, essentially that advice about should I marry again. And now I realize you're the last person on earth I should be asking because, you don't know, do you?
Well, my advice to any woman who is considering marriage these days, and I have to give you a little bit of history of why I married in the first place. I met my first husband when I was 19. I didn't marry him until I was 29, and I didn't divorce him until I was a lot older.
Whatever.
I was in my 50s. So the thing is, I don't consider marriage something you want to jump into. In fact, I think you need to take as much time as needed and then add some before you make that decision. I am a firm believer that people must live together for an extended period of time to determine whether or not you can even stand each other. And love is really something that fades fairly quickly. Lust even quicker often. And, you know, the bottom line is, especially for us women, because we don't generally age well, even if we can afford the surgery, we just look like a plastic version of what we used to look like. Because we don't age well, and where men can get away with a few lines and look rugged, we have to think about our future and our financial stability. So as a consequence, what's really key is that when you do find someone, you want to make sure that A, they don't have any financial liability from any previous relationships. And also you want to make sure that they have ambition and that, they're not expecting you to sign a prenup, that there's a whole host of other things that are in place that are still going to honor you as the, you know, the female and the woman that you are and the brilliant mind that you are, but at the same time that you are also going to be considered when it comes to financial needs in the future. So it's really important to not marry someone who's been married before because they will have financial obligations from their previous relationship, whether they got bratty kids or not. And here's the other thing that's kind of scary, and this is—I hope you're sitting down for this. The statistics for marriage, for the first marriage, and again, it depends on what state or whether you're going to compare all of the U.S. or all of Canada or combine all of North America, but typically it's around between 40% to 50%. California has the big ticket, and they have the highest divorce rate in North America, so those Californians are right up there, you know, going from California and heading over to Vegas to they go to Vegas to get a quick marriage, and then when they're in back home in California, they take a quick trip down to San Diego, cross the border into Tijuana, and get a quick divorce. Those are the old days. The thing is, you're statistically 40 to 50% going to not survive your marriage round one. When you get into round two, the statistics are even worse. Then you're into the 60 to 65% of those marriages fail. Third marriages, oh, my God, 70 to 75%. So, really, you want a virgin man. You do not want someone who has been married before. This is a huge mistake. So that's rule number one. So what do you think of that?
Well, darling, I think I've run into someone who's even more cynical than I am. And I am I am just amazed. I am amazed. Now, Heidi, what about the old analogy? And it's really, you know, I always thought it was kind of cool. I mean, my marriage would be evidence of it. What about the analogy that getting married is like jumping out of the plane, and it should be, you know, you just go for it and take your chances. I mean, you laid out a very methodical approach, essentially having a future husband investigated and
very important.
Yeah. Well, you know, what about the how about the jumping out of a plane analogy? I mean, don't you see the romance of it?
Well, I also see the suicidal end of it, because if your parachute doesn't open, you know, you're just a big splat at the bottom. I mean, you want to take that risk. I personally think you're better off just staying on the plane and getting out when it's on the ground. You know, less messy, less risky. I feel that the times have changed, and times have changed for the better. First of all, you know, diseases that are sex-related, even though some of them can still kill you, there's all sorts of drugs now that you can take to prevent that. There's lots of opportunity to have a sexual relationship, which is really what drives marriage in the first place. And, you know, there's absolutely no shame attached to that anymore. Back in, you know, the 50s and the 60s, when we were forced to marry, especially if, God forbid, we had a bun in the oven, because, of course, you cannot have a family on your own. Those times have changed. So these days, in order to have a fulfilling sexual life, you no longer need to be married. And in fact, there is no need for exclusivity. You could have somebody on Monday and somebody on Tuesday, and, you know, and they don't need to know about each other. You need to do it smartly, but at the same time, the needs of relationships have changed so much, and because there isn't this ongoing shame attached to being, you know, what used to be called a loose woman, we now have that freedom to, you know, explore and move on, especially, you know, post-menopausal women. We don't have to worry about getting pregnant anymore. So, you know, I think that the game has changed so dramatically that we no longer really need marriage. Marriage is more of a traditional thing, and often it is also driven by religious beliefs, and I, you know, I honor that. I'm not here to interfere and you know, pass judgment on that. I think everyone is entitled to whatever their beliefs are and whatever works for them.
Well, yeah, and cultural beliefs as well. But it seems mm-hmm. Now I want to go back to another thing that you said that you recommended, which to me, on the face of it, was a little bit strange. The idea that if I were looking to marry again, that I would be better off to identify a man who had never married. And I thought, you know, well, unless he's a child, which I wouldn't object to marrying a child, but if unless he's a child, you know, that some of the guys who are older and haven't been married, they're just weird. They have their own way of doing things. They just be a little hard to handle. And then I started thinking about George Clooney. I mean, mm-hmm. That would be a perfect example of a man who's never married, who's, you know, possibly people might consider him, you know, a pretty good candidate to be their own husband.
I would definitely put him on my list. Absolutely.
he would belong on my list. And, you know, I don't know why. But he would. And I just, I think I would be prepared to overlook any sort of odd behavior and absurdities that the man might possess, you know. But anyway, you give really interesting advice, and I have certainly come to the conclusion that I will not marry again, although I would for wealth and position. You know, I would just make an exception for that.
Would you marry just so that you could divorce again, though? That's the question. Because you have to look at it, you know, what's the objective? Is the objective to marry? Or is it the objective to go through another divorce? Because if that's the objective.
Well, I did say that. Mm-hmm. I did say that. I was just trying to be silly. You know, this is Women Are Not Funny, and we have to, at the end of the day, you know, this is a property owned by my company, New Media International. This, what will happen is our experts will take this and they'll parse out everything and they will figure out the ratios, you know, and we are required to have a certain amount of silly in every show. Mm. Certainly over the quarter, our silliness ratio, we must maintain it. It doesn't have to be real high, but we work on that. Yes, to marry just to divorce would be silly. I hope the bean counters at New Media International are noting that I said something that was really extremely silly, and I will meet the quotient. Now, I don't think that's a good idea. However, I do think, you know, one of the things I noticed is during the last presidential election, during the primary, when Rudy Giuliani was still in the race, mm-hmm. he received a lot of criticism from his Republican counterparts and from the Republican rank and file who were not supporting him, the ones that weren't supporting him, for the fact that he was on his third marriage and his wife was also on her third marriage. And I thought at the time, I thought that is ridiculous that they are criticizing those poor people for that, because to me what that shows, all it shows is optimism, you know, just optimism in the face of of reality. Mm-hmm. So, when I hear about multiple marriages, that's just really what comes to my mind is, oh, my God, that person is extremely optimistic.
Well, coming from a lawyer, I can see why this would excite you.
You know what? I must tell you that as a lawyer, I have performed one divorce, okay? And I did it as a volunteer for a legal agency. For a legal agency in Illinois where I was in practice at the time, Prairie State Legal Services. I was a volunteer, and that's really what that organization did for the most part is indigent divorces. Okay. Indigent divorces. My clients had my client and her husband had a lot of problems. Being married was not, you know, was so far down on the list.
Right.
It wasn't even funny. And helping her get a divorce didn't really solve any of her many, many problems. And it was very, you know, one of the things that I learned, the only thing I learned from that experience is even though I want to be a good person and even though I think volunteer work and volunteer work as a lawyer is a good thing to do, I could not do divorces. I've never done family law and I couldn't do it. So, although estate planning surely is largely family law, but it's not, I've not done a divorce other than that one. And then, of course, I was involved in my own. But, anyway.
I think you need to be more cynical. You need to work on your cynicism to really graduate to becoming a full-time divorce lawyer. I mean that's part and parcel with that whole industry. You need to constantly be cynical. So my advice to you is to start hanging around a lot of divorce lawyers so that their cynicism can start to, you know, sort of rub off on you, and then you would be ready to move on and pursue
Here's the thing, though. I mean, let me just lay this out and make a claim. My claim is I'm plenty damn cynical. I mean, I really am. And if there's a way to be more so, I do not want to be it. I do not. I am cynical enough as it is, and you are cynical. You're more cynical than I am. Neither of us want to be divorce lawyers. So, I think we're fine just as we are,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, I don't want to lose what I have. I just don't want any more of it. Okay.
Okay.
So, one of the things that I'm curious about, and I really would recommend anyone who wants on a Sunday evening, if you would like to be entertained by the situation of dads being divorced, that may sound very sad. you should tune into Heidi's show, and they can find that. I'm going to give the URL, and then you're going to correct it. Okay?
I am.
Can we do it that way?
Sure.
It's divorceddadsweekly.net.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Now, where you messed up is that it's not really plural. It's
okay.
First of all, there's a double D in there, and that was there because I'm a well-endowed woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's divorced with a D at the end, and then there's dad afterwards. So there's the two Ds right beside each other. So it's divorced dad, singular, weekly.net.
Well, I would have been disappointed to get it right because, you know, I had preceded my statement with the fact that I was going to get it wrong and you corrected me, and I like being right. And the only way I could be right in this case was to be wrong.
Mm.
So it is divorceddadweekly.net, and that is the location of the teleseminar. So from that page, you can actually listen in on the webcast, and
mm-hmm.
there's a dial-in number, and it is every Sunday night, and it actually is in competition with one of our properties, Social Media Soiree,
mm-hmm.
which is also on Sunday nights at exactly the same time, not every Sunday night, but it is at 9 o'clock Eastern time is when Heidi's
actually, you're wrong. I have to correct you again. It's at 8 p.m. Eastern.
8 p.m. Eastern. Oops.
So are you on at 9?
We are on at 9.
Well, then, you know, I think you can do divorce and soiree back to back. I think what an eventful Sunday night that could be.
You know, Sunday nights are so fabulous for mm-hmm. any number of reasons, and we just mentioned two of them.
Absolutely.
Actually, soiree this coming Sunday night, ours is only once a month, and it's just kind of, you know, randomly assigned, but we're having one on Sunday night. And it is kind of the opposite of divorce month because it is the joyful romance soiree. And we are going to be talking about romance and giving people tips about romance, and we're going to be laughing about romance. So anyway, that should be a good time. Speaking of laughing.
Okay.
I'm just speaking of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really have anything funny to say, but I have two more items on my list that I said that, you know, we just have to talk about these.
Mm-hmm.
Today when I talk to Heidi. One is, I just want to tell you, and I very rarely talk about my ex-husband, fake Tom Brokaw is his name, and I spoke to him recently, and it had been almost a year since I'd spoken to him, and the conversation went very well. He was very nice, but one of the things that I learned, Heidi, and it was just kind of shocking to me because he revealed it, and no reason, just kind of casually revealed that he is a stalker lurker to my Twitter account. That he comes online and he reads my tweets. He doesn't follow me. I do not follow him. In fact, until that night, I didn't know he was on Twitter or know what his Twitter name was. And he doesn't really do anything on Twitter except he comes there and reads my tweets. So what I found is that my ex-husband, fake Tom Brokaw, is a stalker lurker to my Twitter account.
That is
should
a
I be
scary situation.
I started saying, should I be alarmed? Should I be alarmed?
I would definitely contact the Twitter people to let them know that there are Twitter stalkers and that mm-hmm. women who are divorced need to be aware of this, and also let their attorneys know that this may be going on. This really brings up a really important point, and this is true for both men and women. You must be very careful what you tweet, what you put up on your Facebook, any type of social media, even texting is. I don't even know how to text. I'm a person who has some sort of text. I don't know how to do it.
You walked with dinosaurs, Heidi. Admit it. You walked with dinosaurs.
Well, you know, I'm okay on the social media stuff. I have an older cell phone, and I can't get my head around. I don't understand it. Don't want to understand it. In fact, I'm kind of ready to hang up my cell phone, and because I'm not interested in getting brain cancer. So, yeah, I'm leaving that texting and cell phone world. But here's the bottom line. It's kind of like a tattoo. Whatever you put out there online, especially if it's particularly offensive, it can go viral and end up in your court documents someday, which is not the place you want it to be. So be really careful what you do there. And to hear that your ex-husband has been stalking and reading your posts is truly alarming. Now, I have to ask you, Kay, were you at any time enticed to start revealing secrets about a man in your life just to see if you could prompt some sort of jealousy, or for that matter, start to reveal information about him without identifying your ex, you know, just to make him feel uncomfortable?
Well, I'm always tempted to do anything naughty. You know, I mean, it's just that I have that aspect to my personality. But mm-hmm. the fact of the matter is, I had my view of the situation, Heidi, prior to this conversation, was that he found me so uninteresting that he would never be, you know, the slightest bit interested in what I was doing online. But as a matter of fact, he was, and he actually said to me, the reason I read your Twitter stream is because I think you're funny. And so that was...
Oh, wait a minute.
You know, that was...
Wait. Could you just repeat that for me? What did he said what?
I know. There's no telling about taste. You know, the man married me in the first place. But since I didn't know that he was, you know, lurker stalking me, I hadn't been doing that. But I immediately started doing that, you know.
Mm.
And there, see, one of the things I've been doing forever, I do horrible things like I blip songs with sexually explicit lyrics to my business partner, Kamala Spearley.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I certainly continue to do that. I'm sure, you know, the fake Tom Brokaw, I had noticed that, but I just wanted to ramp things up a little bit. So there were a couple of really cute guys that I follow that I did tweet them and ask them if they would start, you know, flirting with me excessively, mm-hmm. because I for the, you know, kind of for the benefit of fake Tom Brokaw. That was a good thing to do, don't you think?
It's a wonderful, wonderful idea. And, you know, here's the thing. I think you have an opportunity to twist the knife a few times and really make him realize what a fatal error it was to leave you and to mm-hmm. to end this marriage and mm-hmm. to, you know, lose the opportunity to gain, you know, this insight and funniness that he's identified. You know, this is clearly he's had no idea who you were. That's obvious, right? I mean, he didn't know that you were funny.
You know what? The thing about it is, we've already violated just kind of my inner rule. We spent more than 2 seconds talking about him, but I do plan, and I think this is, you know, something I revealed last week. I'll reveal it today. I'll reveal it until people are sick of hearing about it.
Right.
One of the reasons that we have Divorce Month here on Women Are Not Funny Radio is that I'm going to be releasing on February 14th a comedy CD about my divorce.
Mm.
So the CD is about my divorce. And, you know, actually, I think he's going to be disappointed at how little I refer to him in this comedy CD about my divorce. But anyway, he, you know, he was a good guy when I talked to him the other night, and so that was fine. But, you know, someone who isn't really anymore seen as a good guy, who used to be seen as a good guy, mm-hmm. is Tiger Woods. And I just wanted to bring him into this conversation because he is not a divorced dad, but it sounds like he's kind of flirting with the opportunity to become one, so to speak.
You know, I think Tiger is... he's probably wanting to, my guess is he's wanting to kind of double dip on the dad department. And, you know, the alliteration is intended, just so you know. And being a lawyer, you probably know what that word means. So you might want to just put a little definition on your website after we're done with this call. The point is, he was double dipping in so many women that chances are he's going to be a dad with more than one woman. And I think part of it is that he actually has a plan in the future to have some sort of a golf team as opposed to, you know, just one golfer at a time. That you know, golf has only had, one approach, and that approach is that you got one guy with a golf club and a ball, and you know it's one guy at a time or one woman at a time that they're kicking the ball.
Let me interrupt here just a moment to verify this. It is considered an individual sport. Okay, go ahead.
Right, and I think that Tiger sees the opportunity to turn this also into a team sport. Now, the best way to create a team in the golf industry is to basically, I mean, he's one of the best golfers, as far as I know. I'm not a golfer. I'll tell you, I was so ecstatic that there's only been one time that I've ever played golf, and I shot like 200 and something in 9 holes, and I thought, wow, I did fantastic. And then someone told me, no, you idiot, you know, the smaller the number, the better. Because I had the most points of anybody. So, I mean, I'm not a golf expert. And quite frankly, I think it's much more fun if you have a lot of people that are aiming for that same hole at the same time, as opposed to, you know, you have to wait your turn and there's all this etiquette and, you know, you have to be standing when you hit the ball with your stick or the golf club, sorry. I personally love playing pool, and there were a couple of times when I was out playing golf, that one and only time, that I actually got down on the ground and you know, used that golf club as a pool cue and got the thing in the hole. I mean, it was amazing. So my whole thought with Tiger Woods and fooling around with all these other women is, his goal is to create a golf team, and they're all siblings. But you see, his wife can't be kicking out puppies that quickly. So, you know, you want to make sure the kids are all pretty much around the same age. So you need, you know, several women. And I think, what count are we at now? 13 or 14 women have come forward. So, you know, that's a good number. If each woman at least gives birth to one male, then there's a team right there, and he will start a whole other industry and become a multi-billionaire as opposed to just a billionaire. That's the theory. And, you know, as far as his divorce goes, I think his wife is going to hang in there until he becomes a multi-billionaire so that she's going to have much more money when she walks out with the kids. That's my theory.
Heidi, that is a brilliant theory, and you are a brilliant woman, and you have been a brilliant guest today on Women Are Not Funny, and I want to thank you for that. Three things that are coming up, as I mentioned, we have KK's divorce. I want you to be on the lookout for it because it's going to be released on February 14th. It is KK's divorce and I'd Fall in Love with Anyone, a wonderful song by singer-songwriter Paula Kelly. Also, as I mentioned earlier, the social media soiree this Sunday night. Go to socialmediasoiree.com. Make sure you're on the invitation list. And then next week on February 5th at this very same time, we have an interview with author Susan Piver, a true New York Times bestselling author who has just released a book on how to deal with heartbreak. So she is our second guest for our enlarged divorce month. I want to thank you for coming by. Your friendship and participation in this little adventure I'm having means a lot to me, so I hope to see you back here live next Friday afternoon or any time that's good for you in replay. This is Kay Ballard.